Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more. Breathe in, breathe out. Never mind. It was time. Number nine. Let my lies. Feline. With a death wish. Be right. Didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on. With the destiny.
Welcome into the show. We had a bit of an interesting scenario last night in the Giants-Astros game. First, the expected duel of Wesneski versus Tidwell. We all saw that coming as Blade Tidwell and Wesneski went back and forth to determine who was going to be the best recently majorly injured pitcher to come back and do big things. They both pitched well last night. Wesneski goes 7 and gives up the 3 runs. And Blade Tidwell, 5 2/3, gives up a run. Very excited after Brubaker got out of a jam to give him a shot at being the winner. And then Brubaker gave up, a home run in the next inning to remove any chance of Tidwell being the winner. But that's how it goes. As they say, Sean, that's just baseball. That's just baseball. But we also had former highly touted Astro prospect in the outfield against current best hope for, hey, Danny Brown wasn't so bad, right? Like, this is what Cam Smith represents. I went through, because I had much to do, I went through how the Astros farm system is viewed, and a lot of the guys who are at the top are recent draft picks, like very recent, like guys who just got drafted in 2026 or last year. So Dana Brown's stamp on this organization really won't be cemented until he's likely long gone. But the one guy, as far as young players, you can point to and go, hey, this guy we will know quite a bit about in the next couple years, as opposed to guys who are in single A, is Cam Smith. And Cam Smith and Drew Gilbert went back and forth being the heroes. Drew Gilbert hit a home run to right center to give the, yes, that Drew Gilbert, the one that was traded to the Mets for Justin Verlander, who's now with the Giants. It was Tidwell also involved in the trade that sent Gilbert to San Francisco. So both those guys were at it last night, nearly gave the Giants the win. But Tidwell's homer in the 7th looked to be the difference until the final out of the 9th. And Cam Smith, who had already hit a home run to tie the game in the half inning before Gilbert's home run, just squeezed the ball to the right-hand side of the infield, and he hit it in a spot that made it very difficult to get a throw off. And because he's Cam Smith, he can run a little bit, led to tying the game and led to the 9th inning and Josh Hader pitching, and he does what Josh Hader do. He shut down the Giants, and we got a 2-inning outing for Josh Hader, which is something that seemed out of the cards for him as he has worked his way back from injury. In fact, there was a point of contention last week where he didn't go 2 innings, and it cost the Astros. This time he did go 2, only threw the 22 pitches. We'll see if he's available the rest of the series. maybe not tonight if he's needed, but certainly you would hope, well, you hope he's not needed on Wednesday. But if he is, he should be available. But he goes to two and does what he does, and the Astros put up a three spot. Jeremy Peña broke a long hitless streak, and Paredes gave them the insurance run. So they get a win deep into the night in San Francisco, and important because the Rangers were winning their own extra inning game as they won 4-1, so the Astros maintain their half a game lead in the division and avoid falling back to 500. Now two games below 500, and it'll be Hunter Brown on the mound tonight. So nice to see Wesneski go out there and only throw those 83 pitches in seven, and continuing to pitch pretty solidly. The Astros have won the last three games he started, so that's good to know. You got a guy who'll keep you in games, and nice to see Cam Smith continue his hot month of August. Since the month of August began, Cam Smith is showing the promise that you would want, because Paredes is a good player. But if you're talking about the future of this team and one of the guys who could mirror what we've seen from this organization over the last decade, who's going to be the next young Correa or Peña or Springer and the pitchers before alongside those guys? It would have to be most likely Cam Smith. He's on the major league roster. He plays a lot. He's got the pedigree. Now, can he put it together? Is his month of August certainly an outlier? Yeah. He's hitting over 400 in the OPS, as I think, in the 1300s. It's a short span of games, but he has been great in this month, and he continues to show out. The power has shown out in the month of August. He's hit three home runs already this month. He hit two against San Diego on Friday, then hit his third last night in a big spot. So all things you want to see. And as I said earlier, if Dana Brown's not here after this season, which a lot of people expect, although I do see some people who point to those recent draft picks as signs that, sure, the major league roster isn't one we're thrilled with, but if you start to look at some of the young players to believe in, maybe his reputation of helping build organizations is going to come to fruition. He just may not be around to get the applause for it. He may be remembered fondly when people start to analyze, oh, this guy is a big leaguer the Astros can count on. This guy's a star, but that's down the line. The Cam Smith, as I like to call it, the Cam Smith trade is the one where whether he's retired here, because that's what he said at some point, he wants to retire here. That seems far-fetched. But whether he's off in another organization, if Cam Smith becomes a player, Dana Brown can be congratulated for that. And at least in August, Cam Smith is showing up when needed. The last two wins for the Astros, he's been a giant part of it. So nice to see Cam Smith getting it done. And it would have been tough. Drew Gilbert doesn't have a lot of moments in Major League Baseball. It would have been tough to see him be a guy who made a play in the outfield also, tracking down a ball. Was it Varsho hit a ball to right center that Drew Gilbert tracked down? And have him be the hero of the night. I mean, it's something people probably wouldn't lock in on. I'm sure Todd Callis and Jeff may have mentioned former Astro prospect Drew Gilbert at some point last night, but he was traded in the Verlander trade, and no one had any problem with it. Most people, I would say. Some people certainly were excited about Drew Gilbert. He looks like a guy, if you watch him out there, that would be a fan favorite if he could play. Like, he has his own fan base in San Francisco. There's like a section of shirtless dudes out in the outfield who celebrate wildly when Drew Gilbert makes a play. He has a profile of a guy, the hair, the bandana, I don't even know what he's wearing, but it looks like a bit of a bandana. It's probably not really that. He has all the attributes of a guy that people would love. The flowing locks, the defensive ability. He just hasn't been able to really hit the baseball through his young major league career, which means he would fit right in with the Astros, a good defensive playing, non-hitting outfielder Yeah. Feels like the archetype.
Yeah. 683 OPS. Yeah.
Yeah, that's better ones. Right in line with what the Astros look for. It feels like. I did not want it to be Drew Gilbert's night. Thankfully, Cam Smith took that away from him. I mean, I would have gotten over it. It's just one game in the month of August, but for a game you needed that keeps you ahead of the Rangers, watching Drew Gilbert come back to haunt his former team wasn't something I was looking forward to.
I'd still be okay with the Justin Verlander trade.
Yeah, I think I'd still be, you have still to be a real, like, some people are real prospect heads. They love a prospect. So trading for old Verlander, who didn't do much in his return, might have upset some people. But yeah, that was the era, and I guess it remains so, where the Astros are going for it. So you trade Drew Gilbert for Verlander. And for the most part, at least when it comes to the Astros, when they trade for a player, the prospects they send out don't amount to much of anything.
He might be the best player the Astros have ever traded for Justin Verlander.
they've done it a couple times.
Two trades for Justin Verlander. Drew Gilbert might be the best.
Yeah.
And he's played like 134 career MLB games.
A 5'9". He would have been great on our under 6 feet team that we're putting together. But he's 5'9". He's 25 years old. He'll turn 26 in September. I'm good. I'm good with the Verlander trade. I just did not need Drew Gilbert hurting the Astros' division chances with a big night in a season where he doesn't have many big nights. So we avoided that. As the Giants, who are terrible, found another way to lose, and that's what terrible teams do. All right, we'll go to break. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. That number is important for anyone who wants to win a couple spots. Well, for you and someone else, for your guest, to the listener appreciation party, which will be August 28th at St. Arnold. We had a couple beggars this morning. I was thinking about Robert Pattinson. Get these beggars out of here. People really want tickets. Shout out to Matthew, who I wouldn't classify you as a beggar because you were the eggnog guy. So you alerted John and Lance to your eggnog status. And Lance, because it's difficult to get people to do that, chugging eggnog for literally nothing more than probably a gift certificate.
Small prizes.
Yes, as opposed to necklaces in the past. So, and people, as the listenership gets older, along with just everyone who works here, they go, what am I doing that for? But some of the younger people may still want to do it, and Matthew did it. So he's now into the party. He won his way in by his actions in December.
Wow. Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I think that maybe that's an enticement that we could
add. That's what Lance tried. Hey, you guys want to get in the next one. Now you know your entryway and do something that most people don't want to do. Chug, is it a pint or quart of eggnog?
It's like I forgot. A half gallon.
Was it a half gallon last year? Because it's fluctuated. Because Courtney has lessen the amount of eggnog.
Yeah, because it used to be a gallon, right? Because
people did not want to do it, so she has tried to make it more palatable to people.
Soft.
And then John and Lance said, hey, what are you being all soft for? Go get us a real challenge. And Matthew took on that challenge, so he's into the party. You will not have to do that with us. And the beggar I was really referencing was Keith. Mm. Boy, he goes, look, I should get in because of my Vanderbilt stuff. You know what? Enough. You can't be using...
Because of Clark Lee?
You can't be... Diego Pavia and Clark Lee got
the 2 wins.
Yeah.
You know what? Diego
Pavia's invited. You're right. Diego Pavia ain't doing much right now. If he wants to come to the listener appreciation party, he can. If he wants to make you his plus one, Keith, you're in. So Keith, tell Diego Pavia what you tell us. You said Vanderbilt would get 10 wins. Everyone doubted you. And then maybe that speaks to the underdog in Diego Pavia's heart. He goes, you know what, Keith? Thank you. And Keith goes, you know what you can do for me? You can accept an invite to the listener appreciation party at ESPN 97.5 and bring me along as your plus one. If you can get that done, Keith, you're more than welcome to come. Short of that, you got to be like everyone else and call in.
Answer the phone.
Yeah.
Or call.
Call in. And we'll do that again today. Barrier of entry is simple. Name your favorite end-of-show sounder. We'll get to some Texan stuff. Today, we have a defense of C.J. Stroud. And when you defend C.J. Stroud, you have to take someone down with you.
And the one you take down is the rest of the Texans offense, according to Mina Kimes. So we'll get to that. Well, not Nico, but that offensive line from last year. Oh, you're the problem.
I was going to say the other nine guys can yeah, really catch yeah. it.
So they'll catch it, particularly the offensive line. We'll hear from her as she defended C.J. Stroud's 2025. She remains one of the people who believes in our quarterback. So we'll get to that and some other stuff when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
If you're looking at us on the stream, if Sean had flipped it over before we actually...
I did not.
Okay, so they missed what we're talking about.
I did not. I always wait.
Okay.
Or as much as I can for the, commercial break conversation.
Understood. Today. We were just talking about...
If there's any lip readers out there.
That's true. That's very prudent on your part. We were talking about the recruiting of dual nationals. The U.S. is heavily involved in this. And we know Mexico's biggest star from the World Cup was a soccer player who grew up in Colombia, but built a life for himself in Mexico, Quiñones, and became a Mexican citizen and scored their first goal of the tournament. Well, the recruiting continues, and Mexico, it appears, has secured the commitment of a 16-year-old prospect who is American-born. He chose Mexico over the United States, and that happens both ways. For guys who are born in this country and they choose to play for Mexico, sometimes they choose the U.S., like Ricardo Pepi is someone who fits that profile. For this gentleman, his name is Davion Kimbrough. Davion Kimbrough will play for Mexico if he winds up good enough. He's only 16 years old, but he's considered a big-time prospect, and he's chosen Mexico. Davion Kimbrough.
Come on, Pochettino. Can't be losing recruiting battles.
Look, that's part of the job. He's 16, so he can always flip back. Until he plays for the senior team, he could always make the move. But Davion Kimbrough, I believe it's D-A-V-I-A-N, so I'm not exactly sure it's pronounced, but it seems like a Davion Jaleel Kimbrough will play for Mexico after being born in Woodland, California. Not the Woodlands. Woodland, California. I believe his mother is of Mexican descent, so that's how he made the choice to join the Mexican national team. We lost a good one, Sean.
Oh, I don't know that.
I don't know that either, honestly. But he's supposed to be a top prospect there.
Yeah, the fact that there's news about where he plays, I guess, is notable. But
yes.
I don't know.
I mean.
I don't even know. What position does he play?
I believe he's a striker.
Yeah, we're good.
I mean, you need more than one.
Nah, we're good.
But
and Pepe. We got Maligan and
Pepe. I saw Pepe in the World Cup.
And Diego Luna. We're good.
Not a striker. Not a member of the team. At least not the World Cup team. So it happens. This one, just my history of watching the U.S. and Mexico battle, it's unique, and I'll just say that. It's unique, I'll say that. But shout out to him for making the decision. And hopefully, he'll flip back. That happens.
Yeah. Recruiting's still open.
Yeah, it's not over.
Until he gets the signing
It's day. Not over till it's over. Yeah. And he plays because he plays for an MLS Next Pro Club team, which is just the youth development league of the MLS. He plays here in Texas for them. But he also is good enough to play some other spots in U.S. soccer. So there it is. Didn't see it coming. And that's just the world today. You're going to see so much of that as you find players wherever you can. And at least right now, Mexico wins one. The U.S. The Texans are practicing at Reliant. People are
America's team.
Sure. People are taking note that Reliant Stadium is still missing the N or the M on stadium. They're almost finished putting up the new / old signage as that stadium reverts back to Reliant. They're practicing, and the biggest play at camp happened. CJ Stroud hit David Montgomery on an 80-yard touchdown. So all that stuff Woody Marks was saying about throwing to the running backs appears to be true. It was said to be the biggest play, offensive play at camp. We have a dust-up between Keelan Rutledge and Will Anderson, something Will Anderson isn't known to do. He is known to wreck a practice. There's some sound from Sheldon Rankins talking about how when Will Anderson wants to, he'll just wreck an entire offensive session. Like, if he wants to keep you from operating, he'll do that. We have seen, or at least heard, D'Amico Ryans say, hey, I had to pull Will out of practice, or at least have him stand next to Matt Burke so we could get stuff done. That is the level of player you have on that side of the ball. But that doesn't keep Keelan Rutledge from challenging him. We know he taped Jake Andrews to the goalpost earlier this camp. That's a joke. He continues to be the guy that everyone said he would be. And now Will Anderson and he get into a scuffle during a walkthrough of all things.
Okay. Wow. It's like when he took Aziz to the ground before they put on pads.
Yeah.
Okay.
He be who he be. That's what he likes to do.
Swarm. This time on offense.
Oh, you've heard that before, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Swarm mentality.
Yeah. Well.
Wait, does the M stand for mentality? Is it like ATM machine?
Maybe.
No, it's mindset.
Mindset. It's you can say mentality. Mindset. You're not repeating anything. You can say mentality. He's needed because the offensive line certainly has questions surrounding it, and it is used as a defense by Mina Kimes for why CJ Stroud is better than maybe you think. The numbers she's going to recite will tell you he was like a top half elite quarterback, anywhere from 11 to 15 in a lot of his stats. And the Texans as a whole, their operation offensively, should be blamed more than the quarterback. Here's Mina Kimes when she's breaking down the Texans as a whole, talking about CJ Stroud probably taking more arrows than he should.
Very difficult playoff performance for CJ Stroud. Statistically, one of the worst of all time. And it's a shame because when you actually go back and take a look at his stats, and we'll get to the film in a second, over the course of the season, he was actually quite good. I wouldn't, you know, he wasn't his rookie year level, but he was 11th in QBR. He was, when you splice it up, top 10 to 15 in pretty much every meaningful quarterback stat. He was good on third down. He was good under pressure. He improved on some things over last year that I think are worth noting. His time to throw came down a little bit. He took way fewer sacks. That's relevant because I don't think the offensive line did him any favors. And Brett, that was kind of my number one takeaway going back and watching the regular, forget the postseason, which we should talk about that. But watching the regular season, what struck me was how hamstrung the entire operation was by the fact that the offensive line was so bad. The passing game under Nick Caley tried a bunch of stuff, but like when you look at all their like tendencies, it's all things that offensive coordinators do when they have to because the offensive line sucks. Max protect, putting an extra lineman on the field. They were second in quick game rate behind Aaron Rodgers, of course. 40% of the time he was outside the pocket. Like they were just constantly trying to find ways and answers to solve what was their biggest flaw, which was the offensive line.
If I'm David Mulligetta, I couldn't have written it any better myself. This is what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not saying Mina is in his pocket because we see she's not a newsbreaker, so she doesn't have to play the game. it's particularly an NBA game where we, but it happens sometimes in the NFL where the agent is mentioned in the tweet, although no one cares about the agent. Where you got your info from means you have to mention the agent when you're one of the newsbreakers. But Mulligan is like, see, the numbers are better than you think. And he was hampered the entire season last year by a bad offensive line, and he still performed well. Yeah, the two playoff games, terrible. We're not going to deny that, but maybe that's just an accumulation of all the things he had to deal with in the regular season, and it showed itself. Everyone has a breaking point, Nick. And yeah. My client's breaking point was carrying that offense on his back for the entire, almost the entire of the season. Yeah, I know he missed time. Games. Yeah. But when he was out there, you heard Mina.
It's also, hey, listen, I can do it for 14 games, 15, 16. That's on
if you. This offensive line was better, I wouldn't have had to scramble and slide late and suffer a concussion. All the things we place at the feet of this offensive line.
Yeah. Like, I mean, again.
He needs more of that because coming into the year, it's like CJ this, CJ that.
Yeah.
He needs more Mina Kimes, less random people on Twitter.
I mean, again, like if he just throws two interceptions, that is probably the prevailing opinion. Just like look at the rest of this offense. Because we've just talked about the offensive line so much over the last like 2 years. Where it's just like,
Yeah, that's a giant Nick Caserio problem, honestly.
Yeah.
While certainly there's a lot on the quarterback's shoulders to bounce back from his end of the year, I don't know the Texans and how they view him overall, because they certainly get a lot of acclaim for their defense. But if you are a Texans executive not named Nick Caserio, who hires and fires, you go, hey, how long have you had to fix this thing? Why isn't it fixed yet?
Yeah.
Fix the O-line.
I mean, really, like, you can CJ's entire career, he's had not just below average, like, I don't know, bottom quarter of the league offensive line and play caller. Like, he just has never actually had the offensive genius, like, you know, season of where we go, yeah, but, you know, Coach X could do that with anybody. It's like, no, he actually hasn't even had that.
He hasn't had the offensive wizard who goes and gets a job someplace else.
Kevin O'Connell, like, oh, Kevin O'Connell could do it with anybody.
I'm trying to think of young quarterbacks in the league.
Who haven't had.
The Chargers haven't turned. Well, Kellen Moore was with the Chargers, right? With Herbert, he wound up getting a head coaching job. He went to the Eagles, I think. I know I've joked about Herbert being a coach killer because of how often guys lose their jobs around him, but I think Kellen Moore was the one successful Chargers OC who went on to get a job. But for the most part, they haven't really hired guys who go on to be head coaches. Certainly in Miami, Mike McDaniel has a great reputation for giving Tua a couple years, and now he's the OC in LA with the Chargers. So Joe Burrow has Zach Taylor, whatever you feel about that. But his OC went on to become the Titans head coach, but he's now fired. Brian
Callahan.
So CJ doesn't have the young head coach, or excuse me, young OC becoming a head coach because of how well they've done. We're going into, I think we know that Kaylee hires a hit if he eventually just leaves to be a head coach, because that's how it goes. If you're a good OC, you're just going to get a head coaching job. And the Texans have not hired one who has done enough, even with the promising young quarterback, to go get a job. So there have been
Slo got some interviews.
He did
after year one.
Yeah, and then
you got fired.
Then got fired year two. So
the offense was way worse and had better personnel.
So that's on Nick Caserio / D'Amico, and fixing the offensive line is on Nick Caserio. So can he right some of his wrongs and put a complete team together?
Yeah. If I'm CJ Stroud, that is like the, like, or if I'm CJ Stroud representative or proxies on social media, I'm like
Ryan Clark.
Yeah. I'm like, look at this.
Surrogates.
Like, look at these pieces around.
Exactly.
Like David Montgomery and Joe Mixon are like by far the second and third best players.
Two guys that the teams maybe wrongly, but two guys the teams they were with said, "Nah, we're good."
Yeah, Tank Dell. Like there's Tank Dell is a key part of this offense's like upside. It's a guy like who what was drafted in the third round, fourth round,
and has trouble staying on the field, whether it be the major injuries coming back from, but even before then, there are injuries he had to deal with. So yeah, it has been pretty miss as opposed to hit or miss on offense for Nick Cassero outside.
It's been nothing but hits on defense.
For the most part, misses on offense as far as building any consistency for your quarterback, whether it be the OC hire, the O-line coach hire that you had to scrap, and now you're on your second OC, and hopefully all the things people said about the offense being further ahead than they were last year are correct, which I would believe simply based off more time in the system. Whether they're any more successful, we won't find that out for about a month or so. All right, we'll go to break. You want to join us at number 713-780-3776. We'll get into some basketball news because some of the schedule stuff, since LeBron finally picked a team, they were able to make their schedule. So we'll get into that. We'll certainly talk more about the Texans. You know what? We'll do the giveaway, the listener appreciation party giveaway, 11:15. Caller 5 at 11:15. Simply tell Sean your favorite sounder, and you're in for the party on August 28th. So be listening for that. And if you don't win with us, you can certainly listen to Jeremy and show. They'll give you another chance to win. All right, we'll go to break with that.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So with the news of LeBron joining the Sixers a couple weeks ago, the NBA was finally able to get to it, schedule their games, put teams on important dates in the NBA calendar, and Shams, the resident newsbreaker for the NBA, is letting us know who opens the season. And if we remember back to last year, the Rockets acquired Kevin Durant. They're a good young team coming off a 7-game series against the Warriors, so that was a team of interest going up against the. They got the role of playing the foil in the Thunder's ceremony. Seeing the banner, getting their rings and all that stuff. That was a statement that the Rockets were a team of some consequence. It was a close game, great game, in fact. The Rockets wound up losing, and you know how the rest of the season went. Well, the NBA is a little less interested in the Rockets, at least to start the year, at least on opening day. They are part of the big opening week in the NBA, but they do not open the season with a rivalry game. Certainly not against the defending champs, the Knicks. That'll be the Sixers and the Knicks. LeBron against the Knicks. You also have, I believe, Spurs Thunder as one of the games. And then there's a Celtics game as well. So it's a triple header. The Celtics game is in the middle of the afternoon, which I think is the first time they've ever done that.
Yeah. Is this game in like Saudi Arabia or something?
I'm trying to figure out if it's in Europe or maybe in Saudi Arabia. Pistons Celtics in the afternoon, then Knicks Sixers, and then Thunder Spurs. I don't know why that Pistons Celtics game is in the afternoon.
Listen, as someone who does this for a living, I don't hate it.
I don't mind it. I just don't know why.
I wouldn't want the Rockets to play at 2:00. Actually, I wouldn't really care that much. But I mean, like everyone knows that like the Knicks game is going to be like actually the season opener, you know? It's like a week zero situation
Detroit.
No one's sitting here being like, oh yeah, the Detroit Pistons get to open up the NBA season with the Boston Celtics.
We don't expect the number one crew to be on the game.
Spiritually, it's going to be in Madison.
It'll be 3 p.m. local, that in their time zone. In Detroit. It's not in Europe. It's not in Saudi Arabia. It's not in South America. They just put the game at 3 for whatever reason on October 20th. for that one, and then you get the rest of it. The Rockets' first game is in Austin.
Against, there's an Austin team? What happened?
Nope, they're playing the Spurs.
Oh, okay.
There have been regular season games in Mexico.
Yeah.
In Europe. I don't remember a regular season game, certainly without weather affecting the game, being played in a neutral site.
The Spurs have done this the last few years, where they'll play like a game or two in the
Austin?
Moody Center. Oh, yeah, okay. It's when the Moody Center got built is when they started.
Got it.
Again, playing one game, and then I think the last couple of years they played two games.
Like, because Green Bay used to play games in Milwaukee way back when. They would have they have games in Lambeau and then games in Milwaukee. Okay, the Spurs do it. Does any other NBA team do it? Like, the Lakers have done regular season games in Vegas. Preseason games in Vegas. They've done that.
I remember
that as a kid. The Lakers would travel around because they're the Lakers. They would travel around.
Didn't they play in like Hawaii one time or something?
They would generally start their preseason tour and maybe even have their camp in Hawaii and then have a couple games. That's what they used to do. And then they would play in Vegas. They just play all around the kind of the West Coast and maybe even sometimes further east than that. But yeah, I didn't know the Spurs did it. And the Rockets will be. It makes some sense. You got Kevin Durant on the team. There's a lot of reasons to do it, but it'll be Rockets Spurs October 23rd in Austin.
They definitely haven't done it like
this early, right?
Season. I mean, not for the Spurs. They don't open the season, but like the second game of the season they're playing in Austin. Normally, it's a rodeo road trip. Like,
yeah, that makes
workaround.
And yeah, they don't want to spend that much time. Really on the road, so they play a game in Austin
like
or
normally
two.
Like mid February. But interesting.
Is it their first? I think they go to Oklahoma City, so it would
the Spurs?
Be yeah.
They play on opening night.
Opening night. No, the Spurs open at home against the Thunder, and then they play their second game at Austin against the Rockets. So that's how they open their season. The Rockets get to go to Austin. I'm sure Kevin Durant will show all the boys around because they seem to have a very close relationship where Kevin Durant would walk them around all his favorite haunts in Austin.
Yeah. Also from almost 20 years ago.
Hey.
20 years ago, whatever, this fall when he showed up.
Being
like, hey, I remember that.
I expect the retrospective. I'm sure Space City Home Network, even though they don't have the game, maybe they'll do something with it. Hey, Kevin, what's it like being back?
Mm-hmm. Walk around camp.
20 years ago, you were here. You and who? DJ Augustine?
DJ Augustine.
You and DJ Augustine on that Texas team. Augustine, Tucker,
Damian James,
Durant, Damian James, all played in the NBA, right?
Damian James
less so, but
like a cup of coffee.
I think he made a
Booby Gibson.
Booby Gibson too. Where did they? I'm actually being honest. I know they didn't make a Final Four, right? So where did they?
They lost in the second round to USC to Taj Gibson.
I understand never forgiving Rick Barnes
and Nick Young.
Oh, that had NBA players on it too. Turns out,
yeah.
But I understand people who were never with Rick Barnes again after that.
Yeah, yeah. No, the next year he made the Elite Eight, and then Texas didn't make another Elite Eight or a Sweet 16 until 2023.
Until Ronnie Terry. And a half away from making the Final
Texas
Four.
Texas basketball, ladies and gentlemen.
They recruit well.
Yeah, hey.
They care.
The NBA alumni team, when you list it out,
Jared Allen.
They're way above their weight class.
Less much Jackson Hayes, but still.
Yeah.
One of the guys.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah. Come on now. They get guys.
Yeah. Corey Joseph.
Just really doesn't pan out the way you'd like.
Tristan Thompson.
Look, there's no question. There was a time, and maybe even still, that Texas underperformed the talent on the roster.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. It's part of.
Until Chris Beard. And then Rodney Terry.
Yeah. And then even Rodney Terry underperformed in the most important game of his career. Where they had a big lead, could have played the Final Four in Houston.
And who knows what happens?
They get drilled by UConn. That's how it went for two seasons. Anyone who played UConn got drilled.
That's the part where I'm like, hey, they made the Sweet 16. They got the since 2008 off their back, and they were going to beat UConn anyway. So
yeah.
There we go.
Miami beat Texas in that game, a weekend where they beat the Cougs in Texas. They got beat by UConn by, I think, 13 points or so. Something around there.
And that was the closest
game, UConn played in their 2-year run of being undefeated and winning the title in the tournament. 12 wins, and the closest one was a never close after the score was like 21-21 beatdown in the Final Four. That's how dominant those two teams were. And like, when you do that, I get why Dan Hurley is the way he is. He was always like that, but then when it's affirmed by doing that over the course of two seasons, you can't tell him nothing. That's why he gets the, I won't call it a headbutt, like head nod, a referee, and nothing happens to him. In a tournament game, by the way.
No less, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll go to Rick. That's hour one done. Remember, 11:15, caller 5 wins a pair of tickets to the Listener Appreciation Party, which is August 28th. Simply tell Sean your favorite end-of-show sounder. Also do want to remind you that we are headed back to the Golden Nugget, Sean and I both, along with John and Lance, for our fantasy football draft. On Thursday, we're giving away the final spot. It'll be for you and a friend to be in the league with us. The winner will get a 2-night stay at the Golden Nugget on the 27th and 28th. But I have heard that if you want to kind of move that around to the 26th and 27th, if you want to be back in town for the Listener Appreciation Party, you can do that. That's our schedule for our 2 days. We're getting there on the 26th and then staying the night on the 27th. Then we're out on the 28th. So you may be able to do that too if you so choose. $200 in food and beverage credit and dinner at the DraftKings Sportsbook during the Fantasy Draft. Tune in Thursday for your chance to win. And also, Houston Restaurant Weeks continue. It raised more than $1.6 million for the Houston Food Bank last year. This year's your chance to help top that. Right now, through September 7th, eat big, do good. Details at HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com. All right, we'll get back to the show with hour two when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
DraftKings.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.